10th canto, 1st chapter, text number 59.
Drishtva samatvam tvat chaure satye chaiva vyavasthitam kamsastushta manarajan sahasannidam abravir drishtva samatvam tvat chaure
being equipoised and undisturbed in distress or happiness. That Shaure of Vasudev Satye in truthfulness Cha indeed Eva suddenly Yavastitim perform situation Kamsa Tushtamana being very satisfied with Vasudev's behavior and delivering the first child to keep his promise. Sahajan, O Maharaj Parikshit, Sahajan, with a smiling face, Idam, this, Abravid, said, translation of the fourth Bhaktivinoda base is Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. My dear King Parikshit, when Kamsa saw that Vasudev, being situated in truthfulness, was completely equipoised in giving him the child, he was very happy. Therefore, with a smiling face, he spoke as follows. Purport. The word samatvam is very significant in this verse. Samatvam refers to one who is always equipoised, unaffected by either happiness or distress. Vasudeva was so steadily equipoised that he did not seem in the least agitated when delivering his firstborn child into the hands of Kamsa to be killed. In Bhagavad Gita it is said, Dukkeshvan vignamana sukeshu vigataspriha. In the material world, one should not be very eager to be happy, nor should one be very much disturbed by material distress. Lord Krishna advised Arjuna, Matra sparshastu kamteya shitoshna sukadukkara agamapayiro nityastamstu fikshasva bharata. O son of Kunti, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and the disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception, O son of Bharata. And one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. The self-realized soul is never disturbed by so-called distress or happiness. And this is especially true of an exalted devotee like Vasudev, who showed this by his practical example. Vasudev was not at all disturbed when delivering his first child to Kamsa to be killed. We are reading from the 10th canto, the section where after hearing the words of wisdom from Vasudev, Kamsa agrees to spare the life of Devaki. Now the first child is born and after his promise is coming to deliver it to Kamsa. And you can imagine which father or which mother can hand over the child to a murderer, to a killer. But great personalities like Vasudev, who are who follow the principles of religion so strictly, so carefully, they may even lay down their life
for the sake of performing dharma. The codes of virtue were followed by the great kings of the past so well that whatever would happen, people would be ready to lay down their lives. Dharma was considered more important than mere survival. Because they knew that if you die now, you will again get another body. But if you break the law codes of dharma, then you will have to suffer in future. Especially giving up one's promise, owing to circumstances. So here Vasudeva is not at the least disturbed by the situation, handing over the child to such a person like Kamsa. He doesn't show any kind of disturbance. Generally people become disturbed in this world when they are put into trial, difficult situations. That is the reason why this quality of equanimity or equipoise, nature is being spoken here. In fact, in Bhagavad Gita you will find all through this quality of how one should be equal in summer and winter, in man and apaman, honor and dishonor, or when one is put in a situation of sukha and dukha, happiness and distress. One should be equal, one should be stable. This quality is stressed all through Bhagavad Gita. It is said when one follows this quality of not getting disturbed, then he becomes fit for liberation. As it is said, sa amrita tvaya kalpate. Otherwise, one has to be born again. Either you are jolly or you are morose. Either you have to be born again. Great personalities became disturbed, and what was their condition? By seeing that, and at the same time seeing how other great personalities were not disturbed, and how they were always equipoised. We learn from such examples in our lives how we should be equipoised and stable. Most importantly, in the execution of duty. It is not just remaining stable for oneself. One should not waver from one's duty owing to lamentation or hankering. Only a conditioned soul who has no wisdom acts like that. Only a conditioned soul is swayed by hankering and lamentation to act in irregular ways, act in foolish ways, through which he brings misfortune for himself. Whereas a person who is stable, for the sake of dharma, he will never waver from his duty. For performing duty, he will never be swayed by the sukha and dukha. At the beginning of Kurukshetra war, we see Arjuna, it's like a storm in a teacup, as we say. If there is a storm in a teacup, if there is an ant in a teacup, it will be like a big storm for the ant. So Arjuna's condition was like that. And he felt a very great distress in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, before the Bhagavad Gita was spoken. He was seeing the army arrayed on both sides, and many of his relatives and friends, his own brothers and uncles and grandfather and gurus. Guru Nahatvahi Mahanubhavan Shilyo Bhoktum Vaishyamatiha Loke. He said, it is better for me to go for begging alms than to fight with my own relatives and friends. Krishna, it is better for me to go and beg alms. Is begging alms a Kshatriya's duty? No. So he was shirking his responsibility, giving up his duty, and he wanted to do Brahmana's duty. Why? What is the reason? Simply bodily attachment. That was the reason. He saw that, all the relatives of I don't want to kill them. Just like you are a high court judge, now you have to give justice. And you find on one side your uncle is standing, on the other side the nirapradha is standing. So your uncle has done the crime. So immediately you hands up and say, now I am giving up my post. I don't want to be high court judge anymore. Everyone will know the reason why you walked out. Why did you resign from the post? People will know it very well. Because his uncle was in And he was a criminal, and he had to be given some death sentence somewhere. So he didn't want to give, he just, you know, because you know, if I give them punishment, then all my relatives will ask me, you know, why did you, you know, give such a judgment to your uncle? And I also have attachment for him. Same was the condition of Arjuna. Here is Krishna, who is the Lord of Dharma, who is the source of all Dharma principles. And he is telling him fight, and Arjuna is saying no. You know, my mind is troubling me. It's a mental problem. So in this way, one may be overtaken by grief and lamentation. One may not want to perform one's duty. Same way we find how a person can be highly unstable in his nature. One may jump like a monkey at one moment, and the next moment break down to tears and collapse. And so sometimes you see, especially you know, the movies you find, you know, they'll be dancing and you know the drums and musical instruments, you know, men and women jumping and dancing, you know. So sometimes it may go on for 10, 15 minutes or so. And after immediately has to try the thing will come. Crying. Man, dipping, and everyone dipping and morose. Especially in Hindi movies, you find like that. You found that? Practically every movie is that only. Jump like a monkey and cry like that.
Like home?
He's not cry like a donkey. He's saying jump like a monkey and bray like a donkey. They cry like that. So this kind of unstable behavior is seen in the lives of common people. Often you find it like that. Kamsa, you see, exhibits such a behavior. Kamsa wanted to show the world, just look at me, what kind of brother am I? I want to take my sister in the chariot along with her husband. Now they are newly wedded couple, and I want to show the world my love for my sister. That was one kind of ego. Of course, it is not uncommon in the very times for a brother to go and drop a sister and come to her new home in order to help her alleviate her hankering for home. Otherwise, she will be feeling too much separation from home. So, Kamsa wanted to declare the world, say, I am riding the chariot myself. But then, as soon as there was a danger for his life, the Akashvani came to that. Oh, fool! Don't you know? The eighth child of Devaki is going to be the cause of your death. When he heard it, he immediately got down and took his sword and was ready to cut off the head of Devaki. Just see the behavior. He's showing such unstable behavior. On one hand he wants to shower love, on the other hand he wants to kill. So this kind of instability is seen in the life of very downtrodden conditioned souls. They cannot be stable at all times. Like you see, it requires great maturity for one to even reveal the truth to the enemy. Like you see Dronacharya, he knew Dhrishtadyumna is going to be the cause of his death, but he taught him. When Dhrishtadyumna came to study under him, he knew this person is going to be, he is actually created by Drupada in a fast sacrifice, especially to kill me. Is there anyone who will, you know, nicely design a weapon and give it to your enemy and kill me? Will anybody do that? So he is training Dhrishtadyumna as a disciple. This is the meaning of a Brahmana. The Brahmana is so mature that he doesn't care for his, even his life. He performs his duty. He doesn't waver from his duty. On the other hand, you find Drupada, when Dronacharya went to his court, when he looked around, all around, and saw that all the members of the court, what will they think of me? This Dronacharya in tattered clothes, the poor Brahmana comes and claims that he is my friend. So he immediately said, I don't know who you are. Friendship can only be amongst equals. You are a poor Brahmana and I am a great Kshatriya. I can't be your friend. If you want some charity, take some charity and get out of here. So in this way he humiliated him. Because he had become infatuated by man. Tata mana pamanayo. Equality is not there. When one becomes infatuated by man or pride, then what does one do? One insults others, or one forgets one's promise, or one thinks higher of oneself, because of which again one goes out of balance. So this is out of balance. The nature of the soul is to be equipoised. But we can go out of balance. Out of balance means always problem, isn't it? Like in a cycle, when you're driving a cycle, when you go out of balance, what happens? It takes you somewhere else, and there is going to be accident. Similarly, when we go emotionally out of balance, eventually there will be an accident. What accident we will do? By our behavior, we will break the dharma principles, we will forego the duty, we will cause damage and injury to others, and ultimately we will cause damage and injury to ourselves. This way. And most importantly, we will continue samskriti, we will continue the existence in the material world by going out of balance. So the Shastras don't want us to go out of balance, so they want to warn us that always uphold principles, always do the duty. As it is explained in this verse, Madras, Prashastra, Kaunteya, Shikosh, Shikosh, for one, despite all trying circumstances, one should do one's duty. One should not waver from one's duty. Like you see, sometimes the duty may be very difficult to perform, painful to perform, like in the case of Arjuna, killing the relatives. But if that is what is one's duty, ordained by the Supreme, then one should never waver one inch also from the duty. Like you see, Parashuram was asked to kill his own mother. Who will want to kill his own mother? But it was the duty. Not into what he did it. Cut off the head of his mother. And in the same way, when great personalities come to know that this is the right course of action in the current moment, they will do it at any cost, no matter how painful it is. If this is what is to be done, I will do it anyway. Some months ago we studied about Rantidev. So the dharma of a king is to give charity. So Rantidev fasted for 48 days. For the welfare of the public. He performed that sacrifice. And he was, along with his family members, about to break the fast. But then the Brahmana came, Shandala came, dog came, Shudra came. So many people came and somebody asked for food, somebody asked for water. And he was so weak. His body was shivering. He was almost at the verge of death. Still, even the last cup of water he took it and gave it. So he performed dharma. He thought that let me die giving charity. And if you follow dharma like that, dharma, you know the saying, dharma virakshit dharma itself, you know. One who performs dharma protects that. You know? Anybody, if you protect dharma, then dharma will protect you. It is said in the term. Dharma, that is the reason why Karna was protected for such a long time. The dharma devi, she protects him until the last moment. So anybody who does dharma principles without wavering from it, dharma will come to rescue them at the right time. Once when Pandavas were in Gaitavan, Yudhishthir was very happily absorbed in hearing the Vedic hymns chanted by the Brahmanas. So he was relaxing under a tree and all the Brahmanas were chanting the Vedic mantras, and in this way he was smiling and happily spending his time. Lying on a chatai, relaxing. And Draupadi came there. And Draupadi was very furious. She said, "My dear king, I feel so sorry to see the king of the whole world lying in an ordinary chatai like this, who is supposed to lie in a soft bed, bedecked with jewels and gems. The king who is supposed to sit on the throne is now grasping the mud of the ground. Just see the will of providence. And why should we not fight against this adharma? You are actually a presentation of religious principles. And Duryodhana and others, they are wicked-minded. And they have tricked us. And they have taken away our kingdom. So why should we not fight? Just look at Bhima. He is containing his anger. He is like an angry lion, but he is containing his anger and keeping quiet only because of love for you. Just look at Arjuna, who is famous for his Gandhi Vabha. And he is speechless. And remaining calm only because of fear for you. In this way, you are keeping all of us bound and staying in the forest as if we are ascetics. Are you a Brahmana? Are you a Kshatriya? If you are a Kshatriya, then you should do your duty. Kshatriyas have three goals. They have virtue, they have to tread the path of virtue. they have pleasure and they have what is the third one? I think protection, pleasure and virtue, three things are there. So you have to take care of everything in the name of profit, profit, pleasure and virtue. In the name of virtue, you are foregoing everything else. You are saying that you are very virtuous, just like a Brahman, you have given up the duty of a Kshatriya. For a Kshatriya, when one has to fight, one should fight. And one has to spare one's life, one should spare one's life. That is the meaning of a Kshatriya. And here you are, lying in the forest, you know, hearing the Vedic chants and living a happy life. And she said, I don't know how you can be so cool, how you can be so happy. This is not all of that. In fact, Bhima also became very wild. Bhima also spoke up. In this way, Yudhishthira and Bhima were bent upon fighting. In fact, one point of time in this discussion, Draupadi was telling, now people say that virtue will protect those who protect the virtue. But I don't see that. That you have been always virtuous. But here we see that you are, you know, driven out to the forest and virtue will protect you. What is the use of practicing virtue in this world? Then Yudhishthira asked her. She said, although you are speaking very articulate words, which appear to be wisdom, what you are speaking is simply atheism. He said, if one performs virtue with the expectation of getting some fruits, he is considered a thief. He is considered a hypocrite. One should never perform virtue expecting something in return. One should practice virtue for the sake of virtue. And virtue will bring about good for not only the person that practices it, but for everyone in the world. And he said, just look at all these great personalities. Great sages like Vedavyasa, Bhrigumuni, or Narada, and all these great sages. All these personalities came to this world and they practiced virtue, due to which this dark material world has turned into a place of grand activity. It has become bright, lit up. If they didn't practice codes of virtue, the world will not be sustained. It would have just turned into animal kingdom. We are able to live life like human beings only because of great personalities practice virtue. And those who practice virtue, virtue will certainly give response to them. And they will certainly get their benefit. But one should not do practice virtue because of that. And he also said that when I played the guy's game, the last game when I played, I promised Shakuni that if whichever party wins, they should be banished to the forest. And they have to be in the forest for 12 years. And then after Ajnata was period, if they were not detected, then the kingdom will be given back to us. So this I spell it out from my own mouth. How can I say lies? So because we spelled it and because we lost the game, now we are in the forest. We are just following Dharma. And Bhima spoke up. Bhima said, Bhima, according to Shastra, sometimes a period of punishment can be reduced. Instead of 12 years, if one practices suffering for 12 months, sometimes it's considered equivalent. So he was quoting from Shastra. And he said, now we already finished 12 months, come, let's go. So it is a very painstakingly pacified now. He admitted his folly, that it was me who played the game, but I am not ready for war. Of course he said, after 12 years, if we don't get our kingdom in a rightful manner, then I will not stay like this. I will not budge one inch from my dharma. That time my dharma will be to fight. Now my dharma is to be in the forest. At that time my dharma will be to fight. This was the determination of Yudhishthira. He, you know, when they lost the dice game, they removed their crown, they removed their upper garments, they were all stripped off all their beauty, and they were sent to forest, and they were great. Although they were extremely powerful, and if they wanted, they would have easily fought and defeated the Kauravas, but they didn't do it. Simply bound by the principles of dharma, duty, they followed the duty. So even in the midst of adversity, one should not give up one's duty. That is the call of Bhagavad Gita. Matrasta Sastra Kante Shitoshan Sakuragara. And you say, that's what it means. That one should not give up duty. Besides that, besides not giving up duty, how one takes up the sukha dukha is also important. When sukha comes, how we respond to it? When dukha comes, how we respond? Here in the Bhagavad Gita, the section on between 54 to 72 deals with a self-realized person who is called as a sthita prajna, one who has this nature of being equipoised. Here Arjuna is asking this question: sthita prajnasya kavasha samadhisthasya keshava sthitiritam prabhashe katimasi sabhidhita. He is asking, Krishna, what are the symptoms of a person whose consciousness is situated in transcendence? How does he speak? And what is his language? And how does he sit? And how does he walk? Four questions he is asking. How does he speak means, how are his mentality and words affected by the affection, equanimity and anger of others? That's the meaning. What is the meaning? How does he speak? How does he speak means respond. Respond to whom? How are his mentality and words affected by the affection shown by others, or anger shown by others, or some people show equanimity to us? So how does a person with sthita prajna respond to them? So how does a common conditioned soul respond when somebody shows affection? He says, oh, they are showing me affection, they love me very much. So I also love them. That is the nature. So anybody who fans my sense gratification, enhances my sense gratification, they are my friend. We call them as friends. And somebody shows anger towards me, what do you do? He is my enemy. Anybody who shows anger on me, he is my enemy. And if somebody is equanimous, that means they are neutral, so you are also neutral. Like there are so many people in the road, you walk and they walk and you don't even look at one another. So they are neutral and they are also neutral like that. So he is asking, how does your sthita prajna behave? So this is a good question. Then he asked him, how does he sit? Not whether he is sitting like this or putting with one leg on the top, that's not the meaning. Then he says, how does he sit? What is his mentality when his senses are restrained from their sense objects? What is his mentality? Like, you know, when a person restrains his senses from sense objects, what happens? Naturally, there is an urge from within. Pushing, vacho vegam, manasa vegam, jihva vegam, udara vegam, upasya vegam. So all this vegam comes from restraint. So when a person restrains the senses, so he's asking, what about the condition of sthita prajna? When he tries to control his senses, is he too disturbed in mind, trying to control his senses? How does he say? That means, how is he situated? That's the meaning of how does he say. Then he asks, how does he speak? How does he walk? Means, how does he actually engage his senses? Walking is equivalent to engaging one's senses. How does he engage his senses? That means the question is, everyone is endowed with the senses, including a sthita prajna. So does he keep his senses idle and doesn't use them in order to avoid entanglement? Or does he use his senses? Such a wonderful question he is asking. And what is his language? Which means, what a person's language will tell you what is the standard of a person. As soon as one opens the mouth, you can understand. It is said a fool is revealed by when he opens his mouth to the side. Similarly, wise man also is, you know, wise man is revealed also when a person opens his mouth. So how does he speak? What is his speech? So in answer to this, Krishna says, few verses. Beginning with his age is, prajahati yada kaman sarvan pata manogatam atman devatmana tushta sthita prajnasta ruchade. Two things he is saying. Prajahati yada kaman sarvan. He abandons all varieties of desires for indriya tripti, sense gratification. He does not get by his senses. And atman devatmana tushta means he is satisfied in his own self. He is satisfied in the platform of soul. He doesn't have to run here and there for enjoyment. So sthita prajna reveals his position by having no material affection. He is detached from both happiness and misery. That means sthita prajna is not affected by the onslaught of the material happiness and material distress from external stimuli. He is not affected. Like somebody praises him. So sthita prajna doesn't feel, oh, You are pressing me, I'll turn to you. No. He doesn't care. Somebody despises him. Somebody insults him. So he doesn't become affected at all. Just like this. Avanti Brahmana. So many people, when he was a sannyasi, they spat on him. They insulted him. Children were throwing stones at him. But he never cursed back. At all. He never took any insult like that. Rishabhadeva also. Vishwadeva also, Shukadeva Goswami also, they were all stoned by children. And insulted by the public in the beginning. But you never were disturbed by that. Dukkeshu anuvitnamana sukeshu vigatastuha vitaraga bhajakrodha tadhimoyocchade. One who is not disturbed in mind, even amidst the threefold miseries, or elated when there is happiness, and who is free from attachment, fear and anger, is called a sage of steady mind. So Arjuna asks the second question, how does he speak? So how are his intelligence and words affected by the another's affection, anger and neutrality? Or how does he respond? And this is the answer to that question. How? Even the mix of threefold miseries, whether there is happiness or distress, the suffering does not show attachment, fear and anger, and he is always equipoised, cool-minded, whatever way others respond to him. So, it is said that Siddhadir Muni is one who is fixed in knowledge and at the same time is detached, which means he is not mentally disturbed. He is fixed in knowledge, that's very important. If you are not fixed in knowledge, you cannot be in this platform. Your mind will become disturbed. But if you are fixed in knowledge, if you have a vyavasayatma atmika buddhi, then you can avoid being mentally disturbed whenever they feel sukha and dukha. Ya sarvatra nadisneha tattatra prashubhashubam nadi nandati na dveshti tasra vrajnapanishtitasi na avinandati na dveshti. So an exalted devotee is unaffected by material happiness or distress because his consciousness has nothing to do with matter. That's why he is saying, in the material world, one who is unaffected by whatever good or evil he may obtain, neither praising it nor despising it, he is firmly fixed in perfect knowledge. And then Arjuna asks the question, how does he sit? Which means, how are his senses, what does he do with the senses when he is practicing his spiritual life? So in answer to Krishna quoted this, Yada samharate chayam. How does he walk, he asks, isn't it? How does he engage his senses? Yada samharate chayam kurmongani vasarvasha. He gave the example of the tortoise, how the tortoise withdraws the lens and doesn't get affected when it's beaten on the back. So like that, as the prajna withdraws his senses and is not affected. Now one may immediately ask a question. When one withdraws the senses like that, then will he not be disturbed mentally? Will he not again be tempted to fall back into religion? And Krishna says, no, that won't happen again. Why? Because param drishtva anivartate. He is tasting a higher pleasure by surrendering to me. So he will not fall back into irreligion. And then he also says, how does he engage? Tani sarvani samyam yuktasya matvara vashehi asyendriyani tasya prajnapanishita. He doesn't keep his senses idle, but he engages them in mind service. Krishna says like that. So this way it goes, Krishna talks more about the nature of senses and their sense objects here. And the point is, the devotee also should become a sthita prajna. Once you try to become a sthita prajna, this is applicable both in personless and personless, as mentioned by the acharya. One should become a sthita prajna, which means an equipoised person. The reversals will come in the life of a devotee also. Like in the case of Pandavas, we were discussing. Bhishma Pitama, when he was lying in the arrow bed, the Pandavas came to meet him. Krishna purposely took Yudhishthira and the other Pandavas to Bhishma. Because at that time, Yudhishthira was lamenting that I am the cause of the Kurukshetra war and I have killed so many people. Arjuna lamented before the war and Yudhishthira lamented after the war. Both brothers, owing to their softness of heart. It goes to show how soft is a devotee. And Krishna told him, Yudhishthira, don't worry. You did the right thing. You know, you fought for Dharma. And now Adharma is vanquished. You did the right thing. Krishna could not convince Yudhishthira. Because Krishna did not want Yudhishthira to become convinced by him. And then he sent him to Vedavyas. And Vedavyas could not convince him either. And then they both took Yudhishthira to Bhishma Pitamaha. And when they went to Bhishma Pitamaha, as soon as Bhishma saw Yudhishthira and the Pandavas, profuse tears came to his eyes. He was weeping. And he quoted this verse, famous verse in Bhagavatam. Aho kashtam aho anyayam yajyuyam dharma nandana. What is that like? Jivitam nagatam klishtam yukta dharma chita shreya. He said, aho kashtam aho anyayam. Just see the Pandavas. How much trials and tribulations you have undergone in your life. How much troubles this Kaurava party gave you. They put you in a building of lack, and they wanted to set you ablaze. They drove you to forest by trickery. They're playing gambling match and they sent you to forest. And Bhima was fed with poison by Duryodhana. So many different ways people tried to kill you. Although you all are sons of Pandu, the most virtuous sons of Pandu, you never wished anything bad for anybody. You have been always living virtuous lives. Oh, Krishna, oh, anyayam. He said, this is anyayam. Yajyuyam. Dharmanandana. And he said, Jivitam nagata Krishna. It was not at all befitting for you to even stay alive, to undergo this punishment. It's better that you could have died before. But how were you protected? Three things protected you. Vipra dharma achyuta ashrayaha. Vipra means you are protected by the brahmanas, by the religious principles you followed, and by the Lord himself. These three things protected you. Because of which you survived. And now I am seeing you that you are kept on the throne and you are going to rule the whole world. Congratulations, he said. You are very happy. And he shed tears. Now Yudhishthira was convinced after hearing. Yes, this war was fought for the principles of dharma. Neither he was convinced when he heard from Bhishma Pitamaha. So in this way, the Pandavas are put into trial and tribulation. Sometimes people talk about the suffering of a karmi and the suffering of a devotee. There are five differences between the suffering of a karmi and a devotee. When a karmi suffers, he suffers according to his own karma bija. Kama karma bija nam, it is in Bhagavatam. So everyone is carrying kama karma bija and they are suffering according to that. Whereas a devotee is suffering with the creation of the Lord. A Lord creates a situation in the life of a devotee and puts him in a temporary state of suffering for something, some sublime purpose. That's why the Lord puts him in suffering. Secondly, the suffering of a karmi leads him to heaven or hell. He tosses him like a football, different places. You do good, you go to heaven. You do bad, you go to hell. And this way the karmi is tossed everywhere. And many times a karmi suffers intensely in this world, not having any shelter anywhere. Whereas the suffering that devotees undergo temporarily is orchestrated by Krishna for various purposes. Either for dharma purification, or it is given in order to inspire others to see how by such difficulties and tribulations the devotee doesn't give up devotional service, others get inspired like that. And to take complete shelter of Krishna, total shelter of Krishna, so that one will not have any other shelter. And also, when a devotee is put into such severe troubles, and relatives and friends, they talk ill of him, they corner him, and then a person takes shelter of Krishna. And he also becomes free from all material obligations. No more material identity in the material world. I am so and so, I am this caste, I am that caste. I am rich, I am poor. One gets free from all these designations and comes to the shelter of Krishna. So Krishna orchestrates this kind of arrangement for the devotee, purposefully. And thirdly, karmi who says that he is doing pious activities will also inevitably indulge in simple activities helplessly, because that's the nature of the material world. The senses drive us to religion, like that. Whereas the devotee is sure to go back to Godhead after his passing away from this body because of his service to Krishna. And for the karmi, Yamaraj tells the Yamadutas that go and bring all these karmis who are working hard and earning wealth and enjoying life, but don't approach the devotees. He says, when you see devotees from a distance, you offer obeisances and you go away. Don't do anything to them. So even Yamaraj says that. It goes to show that the devotees are not destined to hell, but devotees are destined to go to spiritual world. Back to Krishna. Like that. And a devotee, the karmic suffering is given as a punishment by the daiva or the providence. That is, the devotee's suffering enhances his love for Krishna and accelerates his devotional service. That is the purpose why Krishna puts his devotees in such kind of suffering. So in this way, and lastly, one cannot equate the karmic suffering and devotee suffering, because try to compare the punishment given by your enemy and punishment given by your mother. Is there not a gulf of difference? When a mother is angry with the child, she gives punishment. Or the enemy is angry with you, he wants to give you punishment. Such a difference. Similarly, when one is a karmi, Yamaraj gives punishment, it's very severe. Whereas when Krishna gives some punishment, token punishment to his devotee. That is also done with love for Krishna. So even that punishment is mixed with love. And it is given by Krishna for his devotee. As a mercy to his devotee. Just like we were sometime ago studying Indra, got punishment from Krishna. No matter how severe it was, when a punishment is given by Krishna, ultimately it is for the welfare of the devotee. Like a mother does something for the welfare of the child. Like that. So a devotee should never become disturbed when sufferings come. Even I am not talking about pure devotee, I am talking about neophyte devotee also. All of us, whenever sufferings come, we should always see that I am in Krishna circle, not in Maya circle. There are two circles, isn't it? Antaranga and Bahiranga. As soon as you chant one Krishna's name, immediately you come in Krishna's circle. Then you are orchestrated by Krishna. No more orchestration by Maya. But the whole world is orchestrated by Maya. So any pain comes or pleasure comes, one should treat as Krishna's gift. And Krishna is prodding me, Krishna is giving me something in order to teach me something. One should always take it in that mood. Then one's mind will be calm and undisturbed. We can practically say in the life of Prabhupada, either by external disturbances from the surroundings or the disturbance from his own body, Prabhupada always remained calm and undisturbed. One time when Prabhupada was en route to New Orleans in his plane, all of a sudden there was a storm in the sky. It was a heavy storm. Immediately there was an announcement signal that came, that all of you fasten yourself to the seat with the belt tightly, because it appears there is a possibility of an accident. And within a few seconds, Prabhupada was trying to see through the window what's happening. There was a scene like this. And all of a sudden the plane dropped down. Zoom like that, it was coming down. And everyone was screaming and they were all catching themselves, holding on, clutching themselves to the seats, all the people, and there was screaming and yelling in the plane. And even the top box in which they keep the other things, different things, that opened and everything fell out of it. And all people were pushed to the aisles. And people are rolling within the plane because the plane was coming down, or sometimes it stopped, again it was toppling. And it was almost about half the Prabhupada just turned to the servant. I think Upendra was the servant. And Prabhupada asked, what's happening? Prabhupada very coolly asked, why is the plane lacking? What's happening? He asked. And Upendra says that Prabhupada is asking him as if somebody would ask him, why is the lunch a little late today? And he told Prabhupada, there's a storm. So it's like you would have an accident. Upendra thought to himself, you would in fact die. I am most safe position now because I am right next to Prabhupada. So he was very happy in that aspect. So the plane came actually up to the ground and it rested on the wheels, and then somehow the accident was escaped. And everyone, when they saw that the plane has landed safely and it was going on the runway, everyone cheered and they clapped hands and people were crying tears practically. Otherwise there would have been a crash and the whole plane would be set ablaze and everyone would be finished. And while everyone was shouting and yelling, clapping hands and jumping inside the plane, and Prabhupada was asking, how long it takes from the airport to the temple? And to Upendra. Prabhupada was not even the least disturbed. Neither was he afraid of the accident which was about to happen, nor did he feel a great elation or joy after he was saved from the accident. He was just thinking of the next activity. How long will it take to drive the vehicle from airport? He was asking for that. So this goes to show how much a person's devotee's heart is like a ocean. Kapuryamanam acharapratishyam samudramabha pravishanti yadva tadvat kamayam pravishanti sarve sashanti mahmurti nakamakani. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Kapuryamanam acharapratishyam. Acharapratishyam means undisturbed mind. It's like a standstill ocean. Inside the ocean, many rivers may come in, many rivers may go out, but the ocean remains standstill, undisturbed. So the heart of the devotee is like that. He is never disturbed. Similarly, when we get sick and the body doesn't cooperate, we also become mentally sick. We can easily see that. Like when we have fever, people make up their mind, I am not supposed to go to Mangalapur today. Why? Because I have fever. Yeah. Fever means I am supposed to be in the sick room and I should be lying down till 9 o'clock in the morning. You cannot get up. You are not supposed to hand you around early morning because you are sick. So the mind tells them. People are dictated by their mind. What mind tells them? Mind dictates to them. My dear friend, you are sick. Very good, you are sick. Just take rest. Now every day anyway you are going more than so many miles and you take rest. So the sickness is more in the mind than in the body. Nowadays doctors have found out that every sickness we have has a connection to mind. Without connection to mind, you don't get sick at all. The sickness in the mind only manifests in the body later on. So, that being the case, if one is mentally very enthusiastic and very joyful to render Krishna consciousness, they also heal very fast. Even if there is actual sickness, your body doesn't have immune mechanism to defeat the disease. You get sick, but along with yogasana, they also teach pranayama to pacify the mind, isn't it? Yama, niyama, pranayama, asana. Asana comes later. The idea is, if the mind is pacified and kept healthy, then the body also can be kept healthy. So many of the problems, like, you know, at one time when I had a terrible stomach disorder one time. So the doctors are saying that, you know, first you have to check your mind because you must be too attached to something. So we are too attached to preaching. So that time we had a late night program till 1:30 we used to have in those days. And even after come back in the morning chanting time, we would be thinking about, you know, yesterday night this boy asked this question. That fellow is really a brilliant boy. I think he's going to, you know, become a 16 counter. I think this fellow will remain in Pune. Mind keeps it. So those people whose minds are working beyond the level of how they should be working, they have a problem of indigestion. They will not be able to digest the food, they put in the stomach. Yeah. That's one symptom. But there are many other symptoms also, many other problems also will come like that. Mind is constantly working, doing job 24 hours a day. Even doing chanting also. Like thinking too much. So generally we become too disturbed when our body gets little sick. You get a little wound. You know, small wound, they're like, oh, your entire mind goes there. My Lord, I got wound. Okay, you got wound, everyone gets wound. It's not a big thing. Even children get wound. Both people get wound, it's a big thing. One small wound comes in, your whole mind is stuck up there. All day you are walking and then you're telling everyone, I got wound. We take it too seriously. But a devotee, advanced devotee, he doesn't care about the body gradually becoming defeated by material nature. You can see in this world our body is getting defeated by material nature over a period of time. One time, in 1974, Prabhupada was in Vrindavan. So in those days, in 1974, he was terribly sick. And even to go from one room to another room, he needed the help of some of his disciples, one or two disciples. So he couldn't even move from his bed easily. So he would lie in his bed, covering on the mosquito net. And down on the ground, Shrikirti Prabhu would be lying. He will put a chatai and he will lie in the same, under the same mosquito net. So Shrikirti Prabhu says that, you know, I felt as if I was like a pet dog of Prabhupada. Prabhupada was sleeping in the cart and I was sleeping on the ground. Whenever Prabhupada wanted help, he can call me. He just calls me, Shoto, he used to call him. Shoto, because I'm literally lit up. He wants water, he wants me to take him somewhere. I would help him like that. So one night when he was sleeping, all of a sudden there was a big noise. There was a big noise. And then he opened his eyes and he found a stick falling on the ground. The root stick which Prabhupada used to use, there was falling on the ground. And Prabhupada was flat on the ground, fallen on the ground. And immediately he jumped up. He became frightened. And he said, Prabhupada, Prabhupada, what happened to you? And Prabhupada said, Prabhupada was trying to gradually keep his hand on the ground and lift his body. And he was there, I was trying to go to the bathroom. And when I was trying to walk, I slipped and fell. Shri Prabhupada said, Prabhupada, why you didn't wake me up? I am lying down here only for that. Only to give you support to take you there. He said, no, you were sleeping, you were fast asleep, I didn't want to disturb you. I thought you were resting. I thought I have some strength so I can make it myself. So I was trying to walk myself, but now I realize I have practically no strength in the body. And Shri Prabhupada gave him the shoulder and lifted him. And took him to the bathroom and came back. Prabhupada was literally injured in the leg. But Prabhupada never spoke about it ever in future. Although his body was not cooperating at that time, it was very weak and you know, he could not even move himself, he needed others' help. He was not even a bit disturbed in the mind. He was always, even at that time, he was asking people, so what is happening with the construction? Is that ready? Is this ready? He was talking as if it was normal. Absolutely normal. So this was his condition in, when he was in such a terrible sickness. So he is saying that how a devotee, even though the body is becoming defeated and we are very sick, body is not cooperating, we should not pour all our attention of our mind to the body. It is better that we transcend the problems of the body by focusing our attention on Krishna and serving Him. It's better we should learn that art. That is why all these verses are given. That you know, when it comes to suffering, people generally try to avoid responsibility or avoid duty as soon as there is some problem. Okay, now I am sick, so I won't do any service. Like in those days, I remember when somebody would get sick, the entire Rajabhog would go to that. You know, they later pull Rajabhog late. And now once I observed it, and it was, hey, sick people means you should fast. And Rajabhog Prasad is given to a sick person. Then I used to tell them, better starve them in 2 days, they'll be out. And you are sick. Because it is said, well, you should fast the fever and feast the cold, you know. Somebody has fever, one should fast. And if you eat oil items, you will get more fever by that. So we in this world, we have a tendency to pamper the body too much. As long as you pamper the body, you can be happy in the material world, but you will return back with another body. Same material world. But if one utilizes the body and mind, everything as much as possible in Krishna service, you will not have to take the body again. You can relinquish all the materialism, material body, everything, and go back home to God. So here we read how Vasudev had to do a very difficult duty to keep up his word, to keep up morality. He had promised to come, so that I will give you all the children who will respond to me. So do not kill Devaki. So now he is keeping his word. It's very painful for the father to hand over his child to be killed. But he is there doing it. That is why he said, Yamhena Vatiyantete Purusham Kurushashala Samadukka Sukham Dhiram Sa Amritatvaya Kalpate. One will attain the regions of immortal bliss when one performs his spiritual duties without falling prey to the Sukha and Dukha that come inevitably in everyone's life. In fact, Sukha and Dukha come in our life only to test us whether we are sticking to our duty or we are shirking our responsibilities. And in the name of, some people say, why you didn't come to temple? Because you don't know. You know, home, there is so much financial pressure. You know, there was a big financial crunch in my business. So 6 months I didn't come to temple. I dropped chanting. I went to Maya. Many people say that. Some people say, you know, we had this accident, somebody had an accident at home. So he had an accident, but what about you? He said, they had accidents, I was taking care of them. They said, they never come to Krishna. So one small problem comes in our life, we put blame on Krishna and we try to take off from devotional life. So it's a test for a devotee. How one, like some people ask, you know, if somebody dies at home, then you should do your chanting for 15 days. I told them, you should double your chanting in 15 days. Yeah. So they think, you know, because now something has happened, some old man has died at home, that doesn't mean you have to give chanting. You should chant for him also and for you also. So in this way, one should never give up his duty and put subject to lamentation and happiness. Srila Prabhupada ki Jai. Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki Jai. Bhagavad Bhaktavinu ki Jai. Thank you very much.